Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open our show with two important national news stories and one California news story out of Sacramento. The Trump administration has announced its intent to defy a court settlement and impose indefinite detention on migrant children without public oversight. We'll have details and reactions on our Capitol report. Then on Green Scene, hear about federal efforts to weaken the Endangered Species Act. On Crime Beat, we'll have details about San Diego Assemblywoman Shirley Weber's bill just signed into law by Governor Gavin Newsom to limit police use of force. Then in local news, Helix Water District customers will soon see their bills going up. Find out who voted for the increase and who didn't on today's show. In La Mesa, the City Council has approved a new housing and mixed-use development project on a property that's long been a point of contention in the community. Santee's City Council is moving forward toward creation of an arts and entertainment district. And Lemon Grove needs volunteers for a community cleanup day on August 31st. The Hamul Dulzura Planning Group is looking for a new member. And the Humane Society of San Diego has issued tips for dog owners to protect their pets during high temperatures after a large dog collapsed on a local trail from a heat stroke, but fortunately survived after being rescued. On the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interview is with La Mesa Councilman Bill Baber, one of the driving forces behind the council's approval and concept of forming a community choice energy option, along with the cities of San Diego, Chula Vista, and maybe more. Then on Destination East County, we'll have the top festivals, events, and activities coming up, from grape stomps and berry picking to powwows, gold mining, and more. Hear where to find cool zones during summer heat waves, learn about county plans to expand the Iron Mountain Preserve, and find out how you can help provide firefighter go bags to those fighting wildfires on the front lines, all on today's show. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
In apparent defiance of a 2015 federal court settlement which limits detention of migrant children and their families to 20 days at most, the Trump administration has announced plans to adopt new regulations allowing longer detentions, potentially indefinitely. The landmark 1997 Flores versus Reno court settlement established humane standards for child immigrants in detention facilities and limited detention time to 20 days. It followed a decade of litigation over Central American children who were mistreated in federal custody. It was originally applied primarily to unaccompanied minors, but a 2015 federal court decision expanded the standards to also apply to children traveling with family members. Acting Homeland Security Secretary Kevin McAleenan claims the new regulations will require that facilities be audited regularly and that audit results be made public, the Associated Press reports. But the Trump administration has a dismal record on treatment of migrant children thus far. Numerous witnesses, including attorneys and doctors, have attested to unsanitary conditions, children losing alarming amounts of weight without adequate food or water, young children caring for infants separated from parents, exposure to diseases without vaccinations, immigration officials refusing to provide toothpaste, toothbrushes, soap, or access to showers to distraught children for weeks on end, even refusing donations of these items offered by nonprofit groups. And just last week, a federal appellate court panel rejected arguments by the Trump administration, which had claimed that it had no obligation to provide such basic necessities as soap and toothbrushes to detained children. The judges rebuked the administration in an exceptionally sternly worded opinion that expressed incredulity at the government lawyer's arguments. The New York Times reported in February that thousands of children said they were sexually abused while in U.S. detention facilities, heightening the need to protect these very vulnerable youngsters. And yet scrapping the Flores settlement could remove public oversight of the conditions inside facilities where migrant children are kept. An unsettling prospect given the neglect and abuses that public watchdogs have already documented. A court recently ordered the Trump administration to stop separating migrant children from families after the Trump administration admitted losing track of the whereabouts of thousands of migrant children taken from their parents at the border, many of whom have never been accounted for to this day. A joint investigation by the PBS Frontline series and Associated Press found yet another good reason to prohibit such separations. The series reported that dozens of children separated from their parents were sexually, physically, or emotionally abused after being placed in foster care homes. Physicians have attested that even without sexual or physical abuse, extended detention or separation from parents can traumatize children for life. The Trump administration's newly announced policy has drawn swift and harsh criticism. Jesse Morales Rocchetto, chairman of Families Belong Together, told media, "This is unnecessarily cruel and frankly evil." Rocchetto adds, "It is ridiculous to believe that the current administration can be trusted with self-regulation." House Speaker Nancy Pelosi issued a statement condemning the action, stating, "The administration is seeking to codify child abuse, plain and simple." Peter Shea, an attorney who represented migrant children in the Flores case, told Associated Press that regulations not honoring the settlement agreement would be an immediate material breach, if not contempt of court. Thousands of migrant families remain in U.S. detention facilities, with over 30,000 more migrants waiting in Mexico for asylum cases to be heard. Asylum is an internationally protected right for people fleeing violence or persecution. Jean Piott is Senior Director of Refugee Settlement and Asylum Policy and Advocacy at the International Rescue Committee. She says, departing from the standards established by the Flores settlement will, quote, only exacerbate the dangerous conditions in detention centers revealed recently by the HHS Inspector General, further subject children to inhumane treatment, and possibly subject children to indefinite detention. Seeking asylum is legal, and nobody, least of all children, should be punished for doing so, she adds. Piott says the administration needs a history lesson, adding, Flores was put into place because the government routinely demonstrated that it was incapable of treating children in civil immigration detention even remotely well. Those immigrant children have been subjected to prolonged detention with unrelated adults and criminal offenders simply for seeking safety, Piott notes. Further, these children were subject to sexually invasive strip searches, denied basic food and water, and had inadequate access to educational services, all while languishing in detention for years in many cases. The administration's new rule does not uphold the spirit of Flores, Piott concludes, and predicts it will be swiftly challenged. Reporting on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Gene Carpenter with a Green Scene Report. In early August, the United Nations and International Union for Conservation of Nature published reports warning that climate change is pushing a million species closer to extinction. Yet now, the Trump administration has announced plans that will dramatically weaken protections for endangered and threatened species. The plan announced by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration are set to take effect in September. It puts at risk species in greater peril through three changes. First, by allowing the government to consider economic factors before categorizing a species as endangered or threatened. Second, by allowing protections for threatened species such as polar bears to be decided on a case-by-case basis. And third, decisions over risk to species in the foreseeable future could exclude consideration of climate change impacts. The Endangered Species Act was signed into law by Republican President Richard Nixon in 1973 and is credited with saving many animals and plants from vanishing forever. Over 1,600 species are currently protected by the act, including extremely rare species in the U.S., such as jaguars, ocelots, and California condors. U.S. Secretary of the Interior David Bernhardt defends slashing protections, stating, "The Act's effectiveness rests on clear, consistent, and efficient implementation." But critics say allowing economics to take priority over biology is a sellout to industries such as logging, oil, mining, ranchers, and developers, putting profits over preservation. The changes are supported by the National Association of Home Builders, the Western Energy Alliance, the Cattlemen's Association, and other special interests. Lena Moffitt, a senior director at the Sierra Club, says the Endangered Species Act is the most effective and essential law to protecting wildlife. Without it, iconic American species like the bald eagle, California condor, gray wolf, and humpback whale could be lost forever. She notes, adding that over 99% of species protected by the act have avoided extinction. She says the federal government is abandoning its responsibility for politics and profit. The San Diego Zoo also opposes weakening the Endangered Species Act, with changes that the zoo says will make it harder for it to protect species worldwide for future generations. Massachusetts has filed a lawsuit seeking to stop the new rules from being implemented, a suit that California could join. California Attorney General Javier Becerra issued a statement condemning the changes. Becerra says, "As we face the unprecedented threat of a climate emergency, now is the time to strengthen our planet's biodiversity, not destroy it," adding, "We're ready to fight to preserve this important law. The species with whom we share this planet and depend on deserve no less."
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
California will soon have a tougher new legal standard for the use of deadly force by police under legislation signed by Governor Gavin Newsom, the nonprofit media outlet Cal Matters report. The bill, authored by San Diego Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, was inspired by last year's fatal shooting of a young unarmed man in Sacramento. Stephen Clark was shot and killed in his grandmother's backyard after police mistook the cell phone he was holding for a gun. The governor contends that with Assembly Bill 392 in place, police will turn increasingly to de-escalation techniques, including verbal persuasion, weapons other than guns, and other crisis intervention methods. Newsom praised law enforcement, saying the overwhelming majority are extraordinary and honorable people. He noted that the state's current budget includes an additional $35 million for more police training, including ways to better handle severely mentally ill people. Nearly a third of people shot to death by police are diagnosed with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or some other serious illness, he said. The governor acknowledged that the new law is a tough assignment for law enforcement, noting, "What's happening on the streets of California is challenging, and law enforcement is increasingly being called to do social work." Corey McCoy, who attended the bill signing, was among the family members of people shot to death by police. His brother, Willie McCoy, was shot February 9th while he slept at a Taco Bell in Vallejo. Six officers fired 55 rounds, hitting him more than 20 times. "I don't think this is going to totally change everything, but it definitely is a piece, and we'll take it," McCoy said. The law reflects a compromise between civil rights activists who want to limit when police can shoot and law enforcement groups who said earlier versions of the bill would have put officers in danger. Under the new law, which takes effect January 1st, police may use deadly force only when necessary in defense of human life. That's a steeper standard than prosecutors apply now, which says officers can shoot when doing so is reasonable. One of the most significant changes will allow prosecutors to consider officers' actions leading up to a shooting when deciding whether deadly force is justified. The law doesn't go as far as civil libertarians originally proposed, and will likely leave it to courts to define what a necessary use of force is in future cases. The negotiations led a few early supporters, including the group Black Lives Matter, to drop their support, and major statewide law enforcement organizations to drop their opposition. After a year of contentious testimony over how to reduce police shootings, the final version of the bill passed the legislature with bipartisan support. Newsom's staff helped broker the compromise in March after Sacramento's district attorney cleared the officers who killed Stephen Clark. Newsom signaled support for police reforms that reinforce the sanctity of human life. And in June, he said he would sign the bill as he praised advocates for working across their differences to forge a compromise. California police kill more than 100 people a year, at a rate higher than the national average, and highest among states with populations of 8 million or more. Most of the people police kill are armed with a gun or a knife. But when California police kill people who are not armed, the impact falls disproportionately on Latinos and African Americans. Together, those groups make up about 46% of the state's population, but 66% of the unarmed people killed by California police killed between 2016 and 2018. Assemblywoman Weber says of her bill, "This will make a difference, not only in California, but we know it will make a difference around the world." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Water from the Helix Water District is going to get a little more expensive in spite of ample water supply and storage. The Helix Board of Directors has approved a residential rate increase of 2.9%. That's slightly less than the 3.3% anticipated earlier this year due to a wet winter that increased local water supply. The increase will average about $4.50 for the average household, according to Helix, bringing the average two-month water bill to just under $161. There's also a small increase in multifamily, commercial, and governmental rates of just 13 cents per bill on average. The vote was 4-1, with Board President Dan McMillan voting no. The increase in water rates will be effective on January 1st. McMillan says he voted against the increase, keeping a campaign promise he gave to his Lemon Grove constituents to vote no on rate increases if the district had adequate funds. He notes that the Helix District had a surplus last year and transferred $1.8 million to its reserve fund. This action could have been delayed, he said, of the rate hike. He notes that Helix also has over 6,000 acre feet of runoff water from Lake Cuyamaca, which it owns. McMillan adds, quote, "I would have preferred using more runoff water this year and only increased charges for the pass-through cost from the San Diego County Water Authority." Almost half of the district's budget is for purchasing water from the San Diego County Water Authority and the Metropolitan District. The Water Authority has already reported a rate increase of 5%, which was a key factor considered by those who voted in favor of the Helix rate hike. The board majority also indicated it wanted to make sure that the district maintains a 5% reserve fund for emergencies. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
For years, La Mesa residents fought to halt the 18-story Park Station high-rise project proposed at Baltimore and University on a site occupied by auto, RV, and motorcycle businesses. Residents later came together to work with a new developer, JPI, on a project more acceptable to the community. The result is Jefferson La Mesa, a four-story, mixed-use development that the City Council has now approved. The 230-unit project on 4.7 acres will include two four-story buildings with residences and businesses, including 10 affordable units for very low-income people. The developer, JPI, will provide community improvements, including adding bike lanes on both sides of Baltimore in the vicinity, as well as improved pedestrian walkways, sewers, drainage, and landscaping. Residents have been adamant in insisting on no more than four stories, the maximum allowed by zoning requirements for the area, absent a waiver. A spokesman for a group of neighbors told council the community approves of the new plan, but did ask the city to provide signs to better inform the public about parking availability at a public parking lot. The project site is located next to a trolley station, meeting state mandates and goals of La Mesa's Climate Action Plan for transit-friendly housing. The project will also fill a need for more housing in the region, which has faced a shortfall of housing availability. David Potter, vice president of JPI, said the company has built over 320 projects nationwide and has gone to great lengths to hold meetings in the community as well as meet with residents one-on-one. Representatives of the Carpenters Union asked council to listen to the workers and make sure that jobs go to local workers, not cheap labor from out of the area. But Councilwoman Christine Alicio explained that council is restricted to considering design review elements, not labor issues, since the project is on private property, not city property. The Jefferson La Mesa project was approved by a unanimous 5-0 vote. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
An arts and entertainment district may soon be coming to Santee. The City Council named this as a priority last year. On August 14th, the Council voted to approve the concept of an overlay zone around Town Center to attract arts and entertainment-oriented businesses such as nightclubs, galleries, museums, theater and dance companies, as well as hotels and other tourist-focused enterprises. The zoning change, if ultimately approved, would eliminate additional reviews for qualified businesses and streamline the permitting process. It would also encourage development of mixed-use commercial and residential buildings up to 55 feet high. Santee officials say they're trying to create more synergies around two key projects already approved that have not yet broken ground: the Carl Strauss Brewery, as well as a combined movie theater and restaurant, plus bring a hotel to Santee. Councilmember Ron Hall says the city hopes to trump what La Mesa and El Cajon are doing to attract visitors, with La Mesa's Friday Farmers Market and the renovated Performing Arts Center in El Cajon, which opens next month as the Magnolia. Hall states boldly, "We'll outdo them someday." Mayor John Minto says the idea behind the Arts District is to provide an incentive to arts-oriented and recreational businesses to set up shop in and around Town Center, as well as Trolley Square. The mayor states, quote, "We're setting up an ability to be imaginative, to take a canvas and paint the arts and entertainment district we need." While the council voted unanimously to establish the overlay zone, Councilmember Rob McNellis said he doesn't think the concept of higher density housing with fewer required parking spaces near the trolley station was smart. McNellis says people are not abandoning their cars, and that the new apartments planned will mean more parking will be needed, not less. He adds, quote, "We're putting the cart before the horse. It's a great concept, but it's just not reality." To further entice approved projects like the movie theater and to get started, the council also approved forming a Community Facilities District, or CFD, that could issue bonds to pay for needed infrastructure improvements, such as streets, lighting, and landscaping. Staff told council that some $7.7 million could be financed through a CFD for the brewery, movie theater, and hotel. Interact LLC, the developers of the theater and restaurant, were also granted an amendment to its agreement, giving the company 15 extra days after receiving a response from the state to the company's request not to pay its contractors' workers the prevailing wage. Interact claims having to pay workers prevailing wages would double or triple the cost for the project. The Carl Strauss Brewery, approved by the council in December 2015, was supposedly back on track earlier this year after settling differences with the environmental group Preserve Wild Santee. But there's been no announcement of any groundbreaking, and the council has been mum about what's going on. As for where to put the new hotel, the council has sparked controversy. Last week, it approved a change to designate a site designated to a new library to instead build a hotel. The site, called Parcel 4, is located behind the 24-hour fitness off Town Center Parkway. The city is reportedly negotiating with several hotel developers. During the development of Trolley Square, that parcel was planned to accommodate a new library for the city, but funds were never set aside. The news spurred outcry from Friends of the Santee Library. Members say they were never told that Parcel 4 was a future library site. The county-run library on Carlton Hills Drive is only 9,000 square feet, inadequate for a city the size of Santee, the Friends say. The county won't finance construction of new libraries for incorporated cities like Santee, paying only for maintenance and staffing. Pauline Kedward, a Friends member, told the council, quote, "I feel blindsided. This was never mentioned as a piece of land designated for a library." She asks, "What about the youth of Santee? Where are they going to hang out? At a sports bar?" But council members all insist there are better sites for a new library, including a fire station and property off Magnolia, where the historic Santee barn is located. However, the main problem, council members added, is always the lack of funds to build a new library, a cost now estimated at $25 million. The same problem has plagued La Mesa, where land promised for a library is now being eyed for housing development due to lack of funds. Councilmember Laura Koval said if a hotel is built on Parcel 4 in Santee, this would bring in more hotel room taxes for the city, part of which could fund a new library. But that didn't satisfy some Friends of the Santee Library members, including Linda Maracall, who says she's been trying to get a new library for Santee for some 40 years. She concludes, "I'd just like to see it built before I croak." Reporting for East County Magazine in Santee, this is Brianna Gomez.
The Lemon Grove Improvement Council invites you to a community cleanup on Saturday, August 31st, from 8:30 to 11:30 a.m. at the Lemon Grove Community Center. Volunteers wishing to take pride in their community are needed to remove graffiti, clean up trash, and make the area look and feel better. Participants are encouraged to bring a team of friends, family, co-workers, or colleagues from school, church, clubs, or athletic teams. Food and beverages will be provided. To sign up as a volunteer or get more information, contact 619-991-1004 or email improvinglemongrove@gmail.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fisteer.
The Hamul Dulzura Community Planning Group has an immediate opening for a new member. The volunteer position will be filled by appointment. This is an opportunity to be involved in land use decisions in the communities. The board meets twice a month on the second and fourth Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. at the Oak Grove Middle School Library. If you're a resident in the district and you are interested in being appointed to fill this position, you can contact the board secretary, Janet Mulder, by calling 619-588-5672, or you can email Janet at jmulder02@gmail.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is John Fisteer with a public service announcement from the San Diego Humane Society. The Humane Society is reminding pet owners to leave animals at home when exercising on hot days. Dogs are lower to the ground, absorbing heat from above and below. Their paws are also sensitive, since the ground is often much hotter than the air, so they may be more sensitive to the heat than their owners are. On Saturday, August 17th, the Humane Society's emergency response team was asked by the County Department of Animal Services to respond to a dog in distress on the Three Sisters Falls hiking trail near Descanso. Half a mile down the trail, the large dog named Joey had collapsed and started panting heavily, a sign of heat stroke. The emergency response team transported Joey to Animal Urgent Care in Escondido, where he was treated for heat exhaustion. Luckily, Joey responded well to the treatment and was able to return home. But some other dogs have not been so fortunate. Several have died on local trails in recent years, including trails to Coles Mountain, Three Sisters Falls, and Cedar Creek Falls. Remember, animals should never be exercised heavily when the temperatures rise above 70 degrees. Always provide access to shade and plenty of fresh water. And never leave your dog in a vehicle on a warm day, where the temperature inside can quickly rise to dangerous levels. Be alert for the signs of heat stress, which may include heavy panting, glazed eyes, a rapid pulse, unsteadiness, a staggering gait, vomiting, or a deep red tongue. If you believe your pet is suffering from heat exhaustion, contact your veterinarian right away. It could save your pet's life.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today, my very special guest is La Mesa Councilman Bill Baber.
A lot's been happening in La Mesa lately, and Councilman Baber has been a driving force behind some of the big changes, including moving toward adoption of a community choice energy option for La Mesa. So, Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Mary.
Now, I understand that at the last meeting, the City Council voted unanimously to support the concept of creating a clean energy alternative where people could buy power from the City of La Mesa or a joint powers agreement with La Mesa and other cities as an alternative to SDG&E. Can you tell us exactly how that joint powers authority would work and what other cities might be involved in this community choice aggregate, as it's called?
A joint powers authority, which we shorten sometimes to JPA, mm-hmm. is a new government entity that's made up of other government entities. So in order to move into this clean energy procurement model, we all determined that we needed a JPA to pool our resources. So right now, as the date we're talking, the three cities that are in concept agreeing on this, we have a lot of details to work out, are the City of San Diego, the City of La Mesa, and the City of Chula Vista. And we're talking with other cities and the county about joining us also.
Yeah, I understand here in East County, Santee is one of those that's still thinking about it.
We've talked to Santee, Imperial Beach, Carlsbad, Encinitas, Del Mar, Solana Beach, and the county are the jurisdictions that have moved close enough where they can join. In order to be at this level, you would have already had to pass a climate action plan, and in that climate action plan made a commitment to move towards 100% clean energy by 2035.
Wow, that's an ambitious goal. So tell us why La Mesa opted to join these other cities in a JPA instead of just doing it themselves.
Well, we haven't done it yet, but we're working on it. It's because there's power in size. Size matters in energy purchases, that's for sure. San Diego is about 20 times bigger than La Mesa, and so partnering with them is we're going to get economies of scale, and we hope those economies of scale will allow our ratepayers to pay less because we can buy power at a reduced rate and be more competitive with San Diego Gas and Electric, and also to buy power at a pure mix of clean energy so we can reach our climate action goals and reduce our greenhouse gas emissions in the region.
So how much money might La Mesa residents save on their energy bills?
Well, I don't know if I can say per household, but our analysis says that we can be 2% cheaper than the San Diego Electric citywide. I don't know if that means going to mean 2% for you, 6% for you, 0%, but on average, we can do it. Our projections that we can do it 2% cheaper than San Diego Gas and Electric. And the simplest way of explaining that is San Diego Gas and Electric still has to pay their shareholders, and we don't have shareholders. So whatever delta that is, we can roll back into the community or just cut our costs.
So as I understand it, the way that this would work, SDG&E wouldn't be completely out of the picture. They would still be providing the lines, the infrastructure, you know, the transformers, all that stuff, and maintaining the power grid, the power lines. But they would not be in the business of producing the power. Basically, the cities, the JPA, would be buying this clean power from wherever they choose to buy it from, whether it's rooftop solar or a wind farm someplace or whatever that might be. But I understand that once the city adopts this, assuming that they do, La Mesa residents and residents in these other cities would be automatically put in the new JPA to be buying their power from these cities, unless they choose to opt out and continue buying power from SDG&E, which people can do, right? They still have a choice.
Can I split that up into two big sections?
Yes.
One is SDG&E. They're not going away. Think of SDG&E. Currently, they purchase power. Mm-hmm. They own and maintain all the wires that the power moves through,
yeah.
And then they do the billing. So they're still going to do the billing. You're still going to get a bill from SDG&E. It might show a line item for JPA purchases, but mm-hmm. it's going to be SDG&E still bills, and they still do the wire. So those things aren't changing. And they are not completely getting out of the power acquisition because they'll probably always be the provider of last resort under the state. And mm-hmm. not everyone's going to choose to participate in the JPA. So SDG&E is not going away. They're just going to get competition in purchasing the power and how much they can charge for the purchase of the power. But they still have a monopoly on the lines, and they're still going to do other billing. So second piece of that would be can a customer in La Mesa or the customer in any of the regional JPA, so let's say the current configuration, that could change tomorrow by who's in and who's out, is La Mesa, San Diego, and Chula Vista. So when I say the region right now, let's talk about those three cities.
Right.
Any customer can opt out of that. We're going to give, I think, up to four different notices where if they don't want to participate in the JPA, they can stay at SDG&E. So it creates competition. If we don't do a good job of getting our prices down, then lower than SDG&E, we're probably not going to get as many folks to join us. There'll be some folks who join us purely on their commitment to reducing GHG and saving the planet. We're happy to have those.
Greenhouse gas emissions.
GHG, greenhouse gas emissions, sorry for the acronym. And we're happy to have those. And other people are going to join us because we're going to be less expensive than SDG&E.
Right. And conversely, I suppose if you're doing a great job, and let's say it's better than a 2% savings or 2% or better, then you may over time have more people who were a little hesitant to take a chance on it at first jump in and say, you know,
yeah, it's a market, it's market competition. And I think that's good for us. It's good for SDG&E. There are other cities in the state of California that run their own energy power. LA does it, and some smaller cities do it. So it's not completely foreign. And cities run municipal utilities. We manage our sewer system. Other cities run their water system.
Sure.
So we're not completely inexperienced on the utility. However, the energy business is much different, and the JPA will be hiring professional staff to manage that.
Makes sense. Now, I understand that at a statewide level where these community choice programs have rolled out so far, the opt-out rate has been really low. Is that correct?
Depends on the area, yes. And that's good. I hope that works. Even in our study, though, we can hit our clean energy goals and our greenhouse gas reduction goals if 20% of our La Mesa folks don't even join us. So we can absorb a 20% opt-out and still be fine.
Which would be much higher than it's typically been elsewhere. So that's
Most people are not even going to notice the difference because they're still going to get their bill from SDG&E.
Yeah.
As long as we stay competitive in the marketplace, and that puts pressure on the JPA and their staff to do a good job in power purchases.
What are the risks? I know there was a risk analysis that was included in the analysis that you had staff do.
Well, whenever you get into the energy business, there's risk. It's volatile. There's plenty of opportunities for the price of energy to change. I could probably spend the next hour rattling off all the variables that could change the cost of energy. So that's the biggest risk, that the things happen internationally that change the price of energy, and we have to absorb that. I suppose the second most likely risk would be if the JPA doesn't do a very good job at managing its own operations, and eventually members could opt out. So if we run a JPA for 5 years, and at the end of 5 years we say, this isn't working, the different members can bail out. We can go form a new JPA or go back and do our own. But the biggest risk is obviously you're in the energy purchase, and you can imagine the different ways energy prices alter.
True. That said, the ones that have rolled out so far around California, some of them that have been around for a few years now, and they seem to be doing okay from what I understand.
Yes, we actually, as a state, are doing good at renewable energy and solar and wind. California's great. We've got a lot of sun. We have a lot of wind.
Yeah.
We have geothermal. We can do all those things to make it work. If we're successful in running the JPA, we might procure our own energy and have our own energy plants where we can do our own solar farms, our own wind farms that the JPA would own. And that would be even cleaner because we're basically not buying it from someplace else. We're producing it ourselves.
Right. Now, another question is how does La Mesa make sure as this JPA gets structured that your city has an adequate voice on the decisions that are made, such as making sure there's enough revenues or savings flowing back to the city of La Mesa to get your fair share, but also the types of renewable power that you prefer. For example, maybe giving preference to buying from rooftop solar as opposed to, say, you know, maybe a wind project that's in an area that might have environmental issues or where the residents are opposed to it or something like that.
Well, the JPA is going to make those decisions, and La Mesa would have one seat on that board. So we would send a good representative, but it's a regional decision making, so it's not all La Mesa. We would be with the other regional partners to do that. In terms of money flowing back, most JPAs who do this do see some savings, and where they can encourage energy efficiency methods. So there might be money to do, this hypothetical, you know, encourage rooftop solar for lower income families or apartment complexes that don't already have it. Mm-hmm. And that would be good for energy saving. Everyone who uses their own solar on the rooftop is great because it takes the pressure off the grid for everyone else.
Absolutely.
So there'll be programs to do that. Like Sandag, it's regional. You can't say, I put X money in, I guarantee X money out, because right. It's spread across the region. But like at Sandag, if you have good representatives and you're fighting for it and you're doing what helps the region, the money flows, right? Because mm-hmm. Transportation is much broader than any one city. Energy is even broader, right? Your electrons and my electrons look pretty much alike.
Definitely. Well, it's certainly exciting to have more of it coming from clean energy, eventually 100%.
That's our goal, and we can do it in California. We have a lot of sun here,
and we
have a lot of wind, so we got the raw material to work with.
Yeah, and this is all part, of course, of following up on the city's climate action plan that you passed a year or two ago. I have to ask, you know, we're looking at Congress, which seems to be so totally dysfunctional on just about everything these days, and including addressing climate
That's
change.
Only been said about Congress for, you know, over 220 years.
Well, true. So how is it that the little city of La Mesa manages to get unanimous support for this from, you know, I think it's to their credit, from you, Bill, you're a Republican, from a couple of Democrats on there, and a couple of independent members of La Mesa's
First of all,
council.
You can tell from your vote count, no one party has a controlling of La Mesa. No party has three votes to dictate it, so we all have to work together. And all of us on the city council are committed to our climate action plan and going towards 100% clean energy. So we're united on a policy and we work together on it. La Mesa's got a lot of good things going, and because we have a really good council that works together. I mean, all four of my members, I think on the world of, they're all great people, smart, and they work hard. So La Mesa is well served by all of them.
Yeah, very refreshing to see in today's times.
Yeah, we're probably not as exciting as some of the other cities because we don't like call each other bad names and yell at each other, huh?
Yeah, you're not fighting and screaming.
How
at
boring
each other
is that?
Saying
right?
Fake news and
boring La Mesa. They get along and they get stuff done.
Well, Bill, we're just about out of time for this, but I want to just ask, is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about the Community Choice Energy Plans for La Mesa's future?
Well, even if we get everything in place by the end of the year, it won't start till 2021. So in 2020, you will get, there'll be public workshops. We're going to be sending out information. You'll find out more about this, but the state PUC won't even let us start for more than a year. And during that, you know, that escrow period where we've started but we haven't officially closed the deal, we'll be talking more to the public, and we're looking forward to it. SDG&E has been cooperative with this. We don't really view SDG as an opposition to it.
They actually testified essentially in support of it at the La Mesa Council meeting.
They're fine. They know we have to use their wires, so it's not like they're losing any money on the deal.
Okay.
They might lose money on power purchases if our consumers leave them. I'll take that. But they're not losing money on their wires, that's for sure.
There you go. And I understand this is coming up to be heard again before the La Mesa Council.
The first draft of the ordinance should be at the council on September 10th. The last meeting, we approved the concept, but there's a lot of details to work out with San Diego, Chula Vista, and the other cities on between now and September 10th. So we're hoping on the 10th we will have a final draft of the JPA document. And then once the cities approve that, then the JPA forms, and then they have to create their whole policies and regulations and hire staff. It's quite a ramp-up period to make this thing work.
Yeah, very dramatic. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Councilman Bill Baber from the La Mesa City Council about the city's ambitious plans moving forward for a community choice energy option for La Mesans in partnership with the cities of San Diego, Chula Vista, and possibly some other cities in the region, too.
Hopefully.
Okay. Thanks so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you for letting me be here.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region. Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features Miner's Day at the Julian Mining Company, berry picking at Julian Farm and Orchard, the Barona Powwow, Julian's Fall Art Show, Sky Hunters in Julian, and a Laurel and Hardy comedy night in Spring Valley.
Plus, we have a preview of coming events including the Sequan Powwow, Julian Grape Stomp Festa, Campo Grape Picking and Stomping Party, the Ramona Grape Stomp, Fall at the Farm, plus concerts and car shows in El Cajon.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The Julian Mining Company will host Miner's Day on Saturday, August 24th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. You're invited to bring the family to try your hand at gold panning, gem mining, axe throwing, and a fossil and artifact dig pit. For more information, you can visit julianminingcompany.com.
Julian Farm and Orchard has 24 acres with over 2,000 berry plants. On Saturday and Sundays from now through September, you can pick blackberries and raspberries from 12 to 3 p.m. The farm is located on Highway 78 on the Santa Isabel side of the highway. You can find information at julianminingcompany.com, owned by the same family, and click on the You Pick tab for the juicy details on berry picking.
The 49th Annual Barona Powwow takes place Friday, August 30th through Sunday, September 1st at the Barona Sports Complex on the Barona Indian Reservation. The public is welcome to come watch native dancers and drummers from across the nation compete at the powwow, where you can also find craft vendors and food, such as tacos made with Native American fry bread. A full schedule of events is available at barona-nsn.gov/2019powwow.
The Julian Arts Guild invites you to their three-day fall art show over Labor Day weekend, August 30th through September 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Julian Town Hall. You can enjoy viewing artwork, enter an art raffle, or purchase art to take home. There is also a Meet the Artists reception on Friday, August 30th from 5 to 7 p.m. More information is available at julianartsguild.org.
Sky Hunters invites you to William Heiss County Park in Julian on Saturday, August 31st from 5 to 6 p.m. to learn about hawks, owls, falcons, and eagles. Have you ever wondered what you would do if you found a sick or injured raptor, or if there were any laws to protect these magnificent birds? This program is not only educational, but also allows you to view these amazing birds closer than you normally would in the wild. For more information, call the park at 760-765-0650.
Saps at Sea, the San Diego chapter of the Sons of the Desert, the official Laurel and Hardy Fan Society, invites you to their next meeting on August 31st at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley. The doors open at 6:30 for the 7 p.m. show. This month, you can see Stan and Ollie escape the law and end up at the top of a skyscraper under construction in Liberty with an accompanying musical score played by the Saps' own Russ Peck. This month's guest comedians are Thelma Todd and Patsy Kelly in Air Fright. After intermission, the Saps will screen Flying Deuces. For more information, visit the Saps at Sea San Diego Facebook page.
The Sequan Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will hold its 30th annual powwow from Friday evening, September 6th, through Sunday, September 8th, at the Sequan Powwow Ground in El Cajon. The event features bird singing and Native American dance competitions, drumming, Native arts and crafts vendors, foods, and more. For details on the powwow, visit the calendar on our website at eastcountymagazine.org.
Fall is harvest season at East County's wineries. On September 7th, the 23rd annual Julian Grape Stomp Festa will be held at Mangini Winery from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can join in the old world tradition by kicking off your shoes and squishing grapes beneath your feet. There is an admission cost as well as an optional VIP package that includes shaded seating, a gourmet cheese platter, snacks, and more. For full details or tickets, check out visitjulian.com and click on the September 7th Grape Stomp Festa event on their calendar.
Campo Creek Vineyards in Campo will host a grape picking and stomping party, complete with barbecue, on September 7th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The event admission includes barbecue tri-tip, chicken provided by Hefty Boy Barbecue, and one beverage. Additional drink tickets are available along with wine by the glass, water, and soda. RSVPs are requested by September 1st at 619-478-2222 or at campocreekvineyards.com.
The annual Ramona Grape Stomp will be held on Saturday, September 14th from 2 to 7 p.m. at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. Guests are invited to take part in the Grape Stomp competition or squish grapes just for fun. You can also sample award-winning local wines and craft beers, do some early holiday shopping with over 40 artisans and merchants, find treasures in a silent auction, and for kids, there will be face painting and other children's activities. For tickets to the Ramona Grape Stomp and more information, you can visit RamonaGrapeStomp.com.
Julian Farm and Orchard invites you to Fall at the Farm each weekend from September 21st through October 31st, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The fun includes hay rides, apple cider pressing, a pumpkin patch, farm animals, berry and apple picking. You can also see an apple pie making demonstration, or try your hand at archery, candle dipping, or axe throwing. A seasonal farm store called The Farmer's Wife features farmhouse decor, homemade candles, potpourri, goat's milk soap, and more country wares. You can find more information at julianminingcompany.com and click on the You Pick link for activities at Julian Farm and Orchard under the same family ownership.
El Cajon's popular dinner and a concert series is held each Friday evening at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon from 6 to 8 p.m. Shows will continue through September. You can bring a picnic dinner or dine early at one of the many nearby restaurants before rocking out to the outdoor concerts. Upcoming concerts include Lightning Train doing Western Swing on August 30th. In September, the lineup includes Stars on the Water Yacht Rock on September 6th, a Tom Petty tribute by the Petty Breakers on September 13th, the Mighty Untouchables with contemporary and dance music on September 20th, and Back to the Gardens Beatles show on September 27th for the season finale with a special 6:30 start time. For full details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
El Cajon's classic cruise nights continue in the fall months each Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m. along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. For a full schedule of events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County!
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
In the good old summertime, in the good old summertime, strolling through the shady lane with your baby mine. Hold her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign that she's your tootsie wootsie in the good old summertime.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Gerald Stevenson with a Green Scene Report. Iron Mountain Preserve, one of San Diego's most popular hiking destinations, will soon be expanded. County supervisors have voted to buy 160 acres east of State Route 67 near Poway Road. That's adjacent to 1,123 acres owned by the city of Poway surrounding Iron Mountain. The expansion will give more room to roam for threatened animals such as deer and California gnatcatchers, also providing space to potentially expand trails to connect up to other trails in the region as part of a trans-county trail system. At that time, County Board of Supervisors Chairwoman Diane Jacob said county and the city of Poway had been working since 2015 to expand the Iron Mountain Preserve. Supervisor Jacob says the action has been in the works for years, adding, "I'm very excited to see this finally come to fruition. Because the land includes important habitat that can support numerous threatened species, it fits within the county's multiple species conservation program. Since instituting that program in 1998, the county has invested $202 million to acquire over 22,000 acres of open space to protect habitat and species in the past 10 years. The county is buying the new land from Poway Iron Mountain Estates for $1.28 million. Part of the funds are from a $200,000 grant from the state of California's Habitat Conservation Fund. Once the purchase is complete, the county will enter into an agreement with the city of Poway to manage the property, with the exception of habitat monitoring that will be done by the county under the Multiple Species Conservation Program."
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news across our border region.
The mother of a San Diego firefighter is asking the community to support local firefighters when they need it most by purchasing a firefighter go bag containing health, hygiene, and nutritional items that firefighters need when they are assigned to battle fires for days at a time. She has set up a website, firemom.com, where volunteers deliver these firefighter go bags directly to the fire departments that need them the next time a large fire happens. Each bag includes meal bars, electrolyte packets to help with hydration, fire wipes to wipe off firefighters and their gear, lip balm, tooth wipes, products to relieve itching, eye drops, cough drops, sunscreen, and insect repellent. If you would like to help a firefighter as fire season approaches, you can find go bags and more by visiting firemom.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.